Article 1 of the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights states that all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood. You're listening to the Article 1 podcast. I'm Taylor Charlebois. In both our podcast and magazine editions, we're dedicated to reporting on human rights issues from a variety of perspectives. This series is produced as part of the Community Podcast Initiative on Treaty 7 Territory and powered by Shaw. In this episode, we explore the profound impacts media has on public perception, focusing on mental health and how the world views it. Media plays a huge role in public opinions about any given topic. Over the course of many decades, the media, including TV, film, and even traditional reporting, have painted those impacted with mental health under a negative light. This is incredibly damaging to those who do suffer from mental health issues. As a result of these negative narratives being pushed by the media, people may be less likely to seek out the help they need out of fear of being ridiculed. My guest, Saraya Aziz, has been suffering from mental illness since she was a teenager. She talks about how it has impacted her and her life. We speak about how she handled her diagnosis and how she tries to talk to people about it. We spoke over the phone. Saraya lives in Prince Edward Island, and for that, we would like to acknowledge the Mi'kmaq and their history and culture. Said, the floor is yours.
Okay.
We can start with, I guess I should do like actual reporting stuff instead of just being like, hey, go ahead. I promise I'm not a bad journalist. Can you talk to how you remember being diagnosed? Like, how old were you? What happened? What, firstly, actually, before we even dive in, what are you diagnosed with?
Yeah, so I'm diagnosed with OCD. Formerly OCD, complex PTSD, generalized anxiety, and borderline personality disorder.
Okay. And how old were you when you were diagnosed with this?
Yeah, so they're a bit staggered. So OCD came in 2015, it must have been. So how old does that make me? 15 plus 8, 23.
So you're 23 with OCD?
Yeah, diagnosed, but have had OCD since I was 11 or 12. So I didn't get diagnosed till 10 years later.
And why did it take so long? Was it because of fear of what would happen, or you just didn't think it was an issue, or what?
I mean, many factors. Like, my mom, like, I just grew up with my mom and I in the house, and she was, like, very ill during my years growing up, so I think it was, and we also have, like, very similar brains. Like, I would talk to her about, like, thoughts I was having from very young, and like, she also thinks that way, and so it was, like, she didn't, I guess, see it as a disorder at that time, probably. Mm-hmm. But then when I was 23, I was starting grad school, and I was, like, completely so depressed, and then had, like, a psychosis, and that's when I was, like, formally diagnosed with a doctor at the school.
And how did that make you feel when you were told?
I mean, I knew for sure that I had it. I do remember that doctor specifically, like, in hindsight, was probably very good. But at the time, I was, like, really struggling with dissociation. And, like, I still struggle with that daily. But he was, in my opinion, like, very focused on, like, the OCD diagnosis and, like, just going down that, like, stream of thought and not really addressing, like, the, like, like my main issue, which I was having at the time, of like just completely being like not present and out of it and like very confused with like humanity. Like, I remember looking at people and thinking it was weird they had legs. And, like, I see now that that's, like, can be part of OCD, because he was saying, like, you know, when you look at a tree, you don't just look at the tree. You think of, like, how to get there and, like, more existential stuff. How did I feel? Probably scared, because that's when I also started medication. Like, are you thinking, like, are you asking, like, how I felt, like, specific to the diagnosis piece of it, or in general?
In general. Whichever, like, whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, definitely very out of body and overwhelmed, for sure. And then that's when I moved back to Ottawa and was, let me think of this now. So I think it was 2015, and then November of 2016, I was suicidal and went to the Civic Emerge, and then they, like, not a formal diagnosis at the time, but they said they thought I had borderline personality disorder, which I felt extremely relieved by. I do remember that, because it felt it was like an answer. It was like, okay, yeah, that, like, that's some sort of, like, because with borderline, like, you don't have a sense of self, for sure. So I think getting that diagnosis, it felt like like something to hold on to, like, okay, at least I have, like, a thing I can grasp to, like, understand myself. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely more, like, relief, but I was very unwell then too. And then in August of 2021, so 29 years old, like just this past August, I was diagnosed with, like, he had the approach of not having like believing in, like, diagnoses as, like, a label so much, but like, kind of giving little different aspects of how my brain potentially could work, which is, like, there's some positives to that, but said complex PTSD and also potentially inattentive ADD, but I mean, you meet them for, like, 1 hour and you just tell them what you tell them. And, like, he, like, in my perspective, and even in his own words, he said that he, like, oh, not his own words, but in my perspective, like, he had, like, he was looking through a very specific lens of, like, women being hard to diagnose with ADD, which is true, like, in the research. But that one, also very dissociated, and the conversation was moving really quickly. It was hard for me to, like, catch up to it. Yeah. That's all my things.
So, was there ever any point where you felt scared to tell anybody, like, any of your friends about any of these things, or were you always pretty comfortable talking about it?
I would say, like, that doctor in August also mentioned, like, autism, which I really struggled with, because he doesn't, like, I think there's just, yeah, there's a lot of stigma around that in general, but he also kind of gave the caveat that he thinks anyone with higher education is on the spectrum, so I was like, I don't really know how to perceive that one. So I think, like, that was just his own biases and his own, like, kind of agenda of, like, anyone who has higher education, like, if you ask the nurses, they'll say, oh, doctor, whatever, thinks everyone has autism. And I just think that can be kind of harmful for, like, people with OCD, because, like, we latch to things and then obsess about them. So I think that was kind of not productive on his part. But that one I definitely struggled with sharing with people, because I just didn't know how accurate that diagnosis was. And also, like, there's, you know, a very, like, clear-cut view of what autism looks like, and it's usually in boys, and then not a lot of representation in women, but also didn't totally relate to it. I don't know. That was a bit confusing for me. Borderline, I have talked about a lot, but there is a lot of stigma around borderline. So I do struggle with talking about that one a bit, just from, yeah, stigma, but also it's a really hard one to understand, I think, because...
Do you have...
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask, do you have any, like, anecdotal memories of trying to talk to somebody about it, it going wrong or going right?
Yeah, I did talk to someone, like, after I got diagnosed, I would talk about it a lot, and I did have someone, like, be very hesitant with being friends with me because of that. And, like, we were very new in our friendship, but this person had, like, poor experiences with other people with borderline, and, like, it really turned her off. And I had to, like, fight for, to switch that around and, like, maintain a friendship. So yeah, there is, like, it that was, like, hard for me, because it was like, oh, I felt like I'm a bit of a chronic oversharer, and I assume that it's like a safe space, but it's, you will get, like, judged, and not everyone's gonna, like, have the capacity or the will to be friends with someone with that disorder, I guess.
Yeah, that's tough. Would you say that ever since you've been diagnosed with borderline that it has been a struggle to maintain friendships or to make new friendships?
Since I was diagnosed, like, I think historically in my life, I've, like, so part of borderline too is, like, emotional, not, like, relational instability. So, yes, I would say I have, like, kind of black and white and, like, some relationship, like, even friendship issues, but, that's more from, like, a fear of abandonment and a kind of black and white way of thinking of people. But I don't think they see, I assume they don't see me, as unstable. Like, I am a pretty solid friend, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So we can, I think it's, like, safe to say we don't think that the mental health has anything to do with the friendships.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we're safe on that end. Okay. Okay. And and now that, you know, like, where would you say you're at now?
Oh, goodness.
You don't have to answer it if you don't want to.
No, I'm open. When I pause, it's just because I'm not quite sure. I would say right now I'm working on the black and white thinking, and trying to ease into, like, the flow of life instead of, like, making judgments about, like, I'm more of an intuitive person anyway, so it's more like, how, if I feel there's a connection, then I'll kind of ride that out versus, like, a thought thing, because I can, you can think people into any sort of box, right? Mm-hmm. And thinking too is, or like black and white thinking, a therapist once told me is like a fragile sense of stability or a fragile sense of safety, which I thought was really insightful. Because when you think in black and white ways, like, it gives you some form of stability that is just, like, not inherent to life, right? Like, nothing is guaranteed. Right now I'm at a period of trying to rebuild self-esteem and also reconnect to things that are inherent to me outside of potential diagnoses, or, like, yeah, like, just trying to make it not my own, like, my main form of, like, self-identity, probably. Yeah.
And do you feel good about it, or do you have, like, good days, bad days?
Most of them are pretty bad right now, just because I'm, like, not doing a heck of a lot and just, like, sitting and, like, ruminating, which is really unhealthy.
Yeah, stewing your juices is not the play.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you do anything to try and remedy that? Like going for walks, exercise, video games, movies, anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I've been painting a lot. Well, not a lot, but I've been like making more, like my art has definitely improved over this period, which is a cool side effect. Yeah, I mean, just not a heck of a lot of healthy coping mechanisms right now. But I do still like teach and, yeah, try to like push through and still teach because other people enjoy it, even if I'm like not feeling good.
Yeah, I think that's good for you for pushing through.
Thanks.
That was Saraya Aziz, who's very brave to speak about her ongoing battle with mental health and shed some light on the very human side of dealing with these issues. You've been listening to the Article 1 podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Article 1 is a human rights magazine published by Mount Royal University journalism students in Calgary, Alberta. You can find us online at article-1.ca. That's the number one. This series is produced as part of the Community Podcast Initiative, empowered by Shaw. This podcast was produced on Treaty 7 territory, a region with a long tradition of storytelling, rich culture, and history. Since human rights are a universal issue, we're committed to elevating and including all voices, including First Peoples, as we continue our work. Thanks to artist Broke for Free for our theme. The song is Daybird off their Directionless EP. My name is Taylor Chalabois. Thanks for listening.